Up next from the Cross Currents Archive, this program takes an in-depth look at the recent prescribed burn in the Hunter Creek Valley, why it was scheduled, and what results can be expected. This show originally aired on March 30th.
My name's Will Rausch. I'm the Conservation Director at the Wilderness Workshop, and I'm standing in the Hunter Creek Valley, where this spring the Forest Service will be conducting a prescribed fire on the steep, south-facing slopes directly behind me. The prescribed fire will occupy about 1,000 acres from the old ghost town up the valley towards the Hummingbird Traverse.
The forest ecosystems in the Hunter Creek Valley are accustomed to a short fire return interval, which means they burn fairly frequently. By conducting a prescribed fire under appropriate climatic conditions, we will clear some of that excess fuel from the area, thereby preventing the risk of catastrophic future wildfires.
So here's the Hummingbird Trail as it comes across the hillside.
I've been working for the federal land agencies for almost 20 years in fire management, and I've seen a lot of prescribed fires throughout the Western Slope and the Western United States, as well as wildfires. The difference between a wildfire and a prescribed fire, wildfire is usually an unplanned event, and there is good wildfire. A planned event, we try to keep it as a low severity and mimicking natural events that probably would have occurred on the landscape.
We're trying to bring those two really back together in a safe and manageable fashion.
Prior to fire suppression, there was a lot of natural fire on the landscape from lightning and even from the Native
American. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Good afternoon. Coming up on today's show, there will be a prescribed fire, weather permitting, up the Hunter Creek Valley this spring. My guest today, Will Rausch. He's the Conservation Director of Wilderness Workshop. Jim Janung, he's the Forest Service Prescribed Fire and Fuels Specialist. And Jamie Werner, the Forest Programs Director at ACES, the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. Six organizations came together to explore the possibility of conducting a prescribed fire in the upper Hunter Creek Valley. The project originated with the Hunter Smuggler Cooperative Plan, which was finalized in early 2014, and seeks to improve wildlife habitat, forest resiliency, and recreation in the Hunter Creek Valley and surrounding landscape. While the group hopes the burn can be conducted in the spring of 2016, weather conditions and safety concerns at the time will be the final determinant as to whether the fire can occur. Last year, I was walking down by Rock Bottom, and I saw this giant, scary plume of mushroom cloud almost. It was really intense, and that was the prescribed fire up on Basalt Mountain. So we're doing one up this side. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so there's a group of six organizations, the Wilderness Workshop, the Forest Service, Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, Aspen Fire Department, Pekin County, and the town of Aspen that have all been working for about a year and a half to bring fire back to the landscape in the Hunter Creek Valley. And if the weather is right this April, then hopefully the Forest Service will be conducting a prescribed burn on a kind of those south-facing slopes near to the Hummingbird Traverse, above the valley floor on the left side as you walk up Hunter Creek.
So what's happened over the last century that we need to do fires?
Sure. So starting in the early 1900s, the Forest Service and other government agencies started suppressing almost all natural fires with the thought that it was burning up valuable timber, it was a threat to communities. And that fire suppression has, you know, been ongoing for almost 100 years. In the past several decades, as we've learned more about natural ecosystems, people have figured out that fire is actually really important for the landscape. There's lots of species that depend on a burnt landscape. It rejuvenates plants, so you get lots of new young growth. And there's lots of trees even that depend on fire to release their cones. So it's really part of the landscape, just like the rain or a river or anything like that. It just doesn't happen quite that often, but it's important to have fire through a landscape, every several decades.
When's the last time, Jim, that there was a wildfire up in the Hunter Creek Valley?
You know, that's a good question. I've talked to a few folks that have lived here past, World War II. There was a mill fire up there. It came out of Woody Creek back in late 40s or so. I walking around up there, I see fire scar, up in the timber, up in the spruce and the fir back up high up there. Hard to tell in the aspen and the brush that's down in the valley there, but, you know, surely with settlement, it usually was quite a bit of human fire activity, especially on the western slope of Colorado, 1880s, 1890s. I'm sure that was, you know, at some point there was probably a little bit of fire up there, but did anyone can recall at this point? You know, it's been long enough, especially in that brush, that fuel type needs, you know, at that elevation, a longer time, probably historically, maybe 75 years. It's pretty high elevation, mountain brush and, you know, aspen, fuel type that we have up there, but, still it's been a long time. It's due probably.
Are there any, of the pine beetle trees up in there?
You know, there's not a lot, and there won't be any that we're targeting.
Okay.
We're not targeting in the, and let me get that straight too. Yeah. We're going to be looking at the mountain brush, which we, you know, most folks look at as oak brush, service berry, that type of thing. And the aspen, you know, the pine beetle is going to be up higher. We're trying to break up that continuity from the, you know, the spruce and the fir and the lodgepole pine, and break up the continuity down into the valley, trying to, you know, reduce the fuels, the old decadent fuels in that oak brush type.
When you say reduce the continuity, literally, so there'll be a forest and then there'll be nothing and then there'll be some forest again? Is that what you mean?
No, you know, I shouldn't say reduce. We're trying to reduce the old decadent fuels that are in there.
Okay.
You know, since it hasn't burned for a long time, it's, you know, that old stuff will grow up, die, and just kind of lay there, you know. Then there's a lot of leaf litter that accumulates. There's a lot of stuff that accumulates on that brush and forest floor that we'll try to clean up. And what I mean by reducing is taking away that old decadent fuel that also enhances the wildlife habitat. They love that stuff because some of the new stuff, the oak brush and aspen, will sprout and suckering and it'll they'll just go crazy over that stuff. They love it. They're eating that old stuff right now. It's old and bitter. They don't like it. You know, they use it for shade and they use it for sheltering, but you know, we're not gonna really just mow everything down, so to speak. We're gonna break it up. We want a mosaic of age classes out there.
Well, that's a nice image.
So we have a mosaic of age class. So we have a lot of young stuff. We have some old stuff. We have everything in between. And this also, if a fire were to come out of the big timber up high and it'll hit this stand, you know, it'll reduce fire behavior.
How can fire discriminate, though? I don't understand how you can create a mosaic like you're saying. It seems to me that a fire would just wipe out everything, so it would all be new.
Right. That's what CNN has described for us.
One of the terms people talk about is mixed severity fire. Mm-hmm. And I think the word Jim used, mosaic, is really true. So depending on differences in the aspect, whether there's a little bit of snow left in certain places, you know, the fire will kind of heat up and consume a lot of fuel in some places. And then it'll hit a spot that, you know, for whatever reason is much more moist. And it might barely burn anything through there. And then it'll hit another spot that's kind of a mix and burn a little bit hotter, but not quite as hot as some spots. So you kind of get that mixed severity or the mosaic that Jim's talking about.
And a lot of that is built into what we call the prescription for the prescribed burn. So there have to be a lot of climatic factors in place before we even go to burn, before we even put fire on the ground. So when Jim is planning this fire, he's looking for conditions that will maximize the potential to create that mosaic pattern.
So do you have people on standby? I'm just trying to understand how you actually execute this plan.
It's a long process, really. Looking at building the plan starting last fall, crawling around up in Hunter Creek for 7, 8, 9 days, I think, plus I had a few other folks helping me beyond that, looking at everything up there, every piece of ground we can look at. Through the winter, making the plan, we'll have a meteorologist. I have a meteorologist that'll be helping me. So we'll be looking at you know, what the winds are doing, how we can keep smoke out of Aspen and up to the east, northeast of town. And after doing this for several years and writing several burn plans and prescriptions for this particular fuel type, you know, I've become accustomed to know what elements we need, what environmental elements we need to really nail down a good window. Now, that window may not even come available. We may.
You could do all this work and it may not ever
be
right.
Wait till next spring.
Okay.
The guys from weather.net, I saw, or AspenWeather.net, predicting 120 inches in the next 4 weeks of snow.
Which would mean you couldn't do it.
I would throw it up for the spring at that point. I think we'd be buried at that point.
Right.
But I you know, that's a good guess, I guess. But my guess is we're in a spring, really nice spring pattern right now, where we get a storm, trough will come through, dry out for 4, 5, 6 days. And as we get later in the spring and those hillsides dry out, we'll use that weather pattern to hit that fourth or fifth or sixth day and burn, and then maybe another storm will come through.
So you can try to anticipate several days in advance and say, okay, everybody, it's looking like it could be on 3 days from now or
correct,
something?
Yeah, okay. Correct. So we'll probably have it nailed down 3 or 4 days prior to. You know, working with the National Weather Service, and we also have a meteorologist with the Forest Service and BLM that's going to be helping, a fire weather meteorologist that'll be helping us finding that window. Yeah, it turns into almost an art, but it's something I watch all day long, every day, from right now until, you know, this is over with. It really just, you know, gets down to that. And we also want to have some snow on the hill around the edges and stuff. That's kind of what we're using as our holding feature up there.
A natural fire protection break.
Correct. Yeah.
Just so the listener understands, the basic window is late April?
Typically, I would say late April. This spring has been unusual. So we did a little prescribed fire, a little burning up in Avalanche Creek down in the Crystal just last week. Very successful. Everything went well. The snow has come off in the Crystal again, the second year in a row, real early. So we had a real good window, and we took advantage of it last week. 60 or 80 acres burned, but some strategic acres that'll help us later kind of buffer our bigger burning that we'll do later in the spring. So I'm thinking it's going to be a little earlier this year.
Might be earlier.
It really depends on the weather, but right now I'm kind of looking at, you know, mid-April.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Will Rausch. He's the Conservation Director of Wilderness Workshop. Jim Janung, he's the Forest Service Prescribed Fire and Fuel Specialist. And Jamie Werner, she's the Forest Programs Director for ACES, Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. Weather permitting, there'll be a prescribed fire up the Hunter Creek Valley sometime this spring.
I know you mentioned seeing the big billowing mushroom cloud for last April's burn on Basalt Mountain, and I want to make sure that everyone knows that that burn was incredibly successful. They were right, the Forest Service was right on point with the number of acres they wanted to burn. The fire behaved the way they wanted it, and the wet spring that we had last year prompted amazing regrowth from the air in August. You could hardly tell where that burn was. So I want to iterate that even though there was a lot of smoke coming up in the air, that burn went exactly as planned.
How does this plan compare to that plan in size?
That entire area was, I teamed up with the BLM on that cross-boundary burn. And I think we were more around 1,800 to 2,000 acres. That day we burned actually 1,300 acres. I think with this, when we do our big burning day, our you know, large acres is going to be around 800 acres or so.
So a little smaller.
A little bit smaller. The entire area we have is 1,100 acres up there, but the conditions we'll have in the spring will be 800 to 1,000 acres. We'll probably have a small day of kind of what I call strategic firing, where we kind of buffer some areas so that our fire doesn't scooch out on us. It's kind of an extra added containment line. We'll do that. That'll probably be 60, 70, maybe 100 acres, and then maybe on the day we get our multiple unit acres will be around 800 acres probably.
You all did that one without, I would guess, the cooperation of Wilderness Workshop and ACES. Forest Service did the basalt fire.
Yeah, the project up there was a lot of cooperation with the state, the Division of Parks and Wildlife. We've done some mechanical treatments up there and some other fire treatments. So a lot of that was in cooperation with them, as well as basalt fire helped us out that day as well. They were on scene. So they're you know, I like to keep it in the district. I'm in the fire district and, right. and use them as assistance. It's a good message for the community, I think, to recognize fire-adapted landscapes in their community and that kind of thing. And that's really the bottom line here.
Will and Jamie, I want you guys to talk about the importance of this particular piece of land from your perspectives.
Well, this prescribed fire fits into a much larger effort that's been ongoing since 2014. It's part of the Hunter-Smuggler Cooperative Plan, which was signed into being by the Forest Service in 2014 and includes forest health improvements, habitat improvements, recreational improvements in a 4,000-acre piece of federal land adjacent to Aspen in the Smuggler Mountain and Hunter Creek area. And all the organizations who are partnering on this burn have been involved with that process as well. So even though we've been planning the fire for a year and a half, we've been working since 2014 to implement a wide variety of projects in that area as part of a 20-year stewardship plan. What's really unique about this plan is that it's federal land, it's Forest Service land, but this partnership allows both nonprofits, municipalities, local governments to be working cooperatively to manage our federal lands, which is critical given the state of the federal budget these days. We're happy to be able to assist the Forest Service in managing Aspen's wildland urban interface.
And I guess the other thing I'd say that's unique about this burn is that the goal is really to educate the community and gain community acceptance for prescribed fire. It's something that we hope there's more of in the valley. And understandably, fire can be kind of scary. And the folks of the Forest Service and the BLM have a whole lot of experience. And so we're trying to educate the community, let folks know that this is really a good thing. And hopefully there'll be, you know, that social license to burn more in the future. And not just prescribed fire, but once you've burnt in an area like Hunter Creek, if there is a natural ignition up there, it'll be much easier to allow that process to play out on its own, which is kind of the ultimate goal, that these ecosystems get back to how they were 150 years ago.
Jamie talked a second ago about the Basalt Mountain Fire and how it behaved well and it all worked really perfectly and everything went as planned. How often do they not?
The Forest Service has an incredibly good track record. I just saw a study that I was drumming up for some folks to look at. Less than 1%, and we're talking over millions of acres, thousands of ignitions over a 20-year period. About a 16-year period back to 2000. Less than 1% escape. And how much damage, I don't have, you know, figures on money damage or infrastructure damage or anything like that. But this is just escape, you know, that we would, you know, have to go after and chase down. But we have a real good program, solid program that the planning that goes into this is the contingencies we put in place. You know, it goes a long way. And that's not just for the fire. I'm talking about smoke, too, the smoke management program that we have in the state of Colorado. And, you know, with the Forest Service, we have to really pay attention not to where we don't want it.
And how do you control that? And what are the environmental impacts of the smoke?
Well, you know, the environmental impacts, I should say the social impacts, really, is what can be damaging. And, you know, managing that is again, it's part of the prescription. Not only do we have to prescribe come up with some environmental elements for the fire and keeping that at a you know, what we call low severity fire.
So smoldery type rather than, well, is that what you mean?
Well, you know, not CNN, not a CNN fire, I guess. You're going to look up there and you're really not going to see flames. Every once in a while, you might see something puff up or some flames come up, but it's going to be more smoke. And we're talking flame lengths anywhere from, you know, when I say flame lengths, that really the length of the flame, mm-hmm. 1 to 6 feet. And the smoke really has it's a whole other element that we prescribe.
When you talk about, I have to interrupt, when you talk about social impacts, are you talking about people's perceptions or health or?
Health, if that smoke were to come down into town,
yeah,
people aren't going to be happy about it. You know, and there is health implications with that. My objective would be to have zero smoke, zero impacts, no impacts whatsoever. We're going to be using smoke monitors. Like I said, meteorologists up there, we're going to depend on really good dispersion, which, you know, is the atmosphere pulling everything up. And then also, you know, a southwest, south wind to push everything out over the over to the northeast. Really, especially with the lighter fuels, the brush that we're burning doesn't put up a lot of smoke and may, by the end of the day when the sun goes down, be totally unnoticeable up there.
I think it's important to approach prescribed fire as a manageable alternative to the inevitable wildfire that could happen this summer, it could happen in 10 years, it could happen in 50 years. But what we are doing here is we are setting very specific parameters to help the fire behave the way that we want to here in the spring when there's snowpack. If we get a natural ignition up there one really dry, hot August, we're looking at a very different situation. So I think it's important for everyone to consider that perspective, that this is a manageable alternative, not only from a safety perspective, but to get the ecological benefits we're looking for, as opposed to those catastrophic crown fires that you see on the news. When we talk about property damage and things getting out of control, those are primarily from those big dry summer starts, whether they're man-made or lightning or whatever. So what we're doing here is we're taking control of this tool, and fire really is a tool. It's a management tool, and putting it on the ground in a way that is manageable.
How did you all come together on this one?
You know, I think as Jamie was talking about, the Hunter Smuggler Plan has a number of different goals in terms of wildlife management and habitat improvement. And really, fire is kind of the cheapest way to achieve a lot of those goals. You know, if you want to treat some of that old oak brush that Jim was talking about with hand tools or machines, it's really expensive. It requires
a big impact.
Yeah, and it's a different type of process. It can do some good things, but it's very different than, you know, what fire is, which is a natural process. And so it was an opportunity to get a lot of good done in a relatively inexpensive way, hopefully pave the way forward for greater acceptance of this important process, and just better than the alternatives, essentially.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Will Rausch, he's the Conservation Director of Wilderness Workshop, Jim Janung, he's the Forest Service Prescribed Fire and Fuel Specialist, and Jamie Werner, she's the Forest Programs Director for ACES, Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. Weather permitting, there'll be a prescribed fire up the Hunter Creek Valley sometime this spring. On the day of or the days before, how do you let folks know, and how many still 911 calls do you get?
I think on the basalt fire, they got like 400 wow. 911 calls. And so we're hoping to maybe have that number here. People obviously see smoke and get worried, but we're doing a lot of outreach ahead of time. So hopefully folks know that this is coming. They don't need to call 911 if they see a lot of smoke in Hunter Creek. And then the day of, there's a lot of social media. We'll have some of those digital LED signs on Main Street that let folks know. And of course, folks up in the Hunter Creek Valley, because it's a popular place for recreation. So we'll be letting people know what's going on up there.
Yeah, I see that you're encouraging people to not use it, but can you close it down entirely?
We encourage folks not to go up there, and you know, there's going to be a lot of fire operations going on. It's going to be a little smoky up there, you know, and hopefully the impact is 1 to 2 days, maybe 3 days at the most. And yeah, it's kind of muddy, mud season up there. It's
Yeah, it's not the time of year that people are really biking up there. I mean, you could definitely still go for a hike, and sure, there'll be a few folks who might not be able to do that, but it'll be quite quick.
Jim, how's it looking this year? I know it's been a weird year with snowpack. How are we?
Yeah,
are we?
You know, I look at things. I work on a national, it's a management incident management team, and we go all over the West, all over the country. But I look at things all over the West, and I look at things regionally, and I really look closely in the Roaring Fork Valley. It's really hard to pin down right now. Like last year, we were so far below at this time last year, below average on our snowpack. And it started snowing about mid-April and raining, and we had about the wettest May that anyone has ever seen, you know, in Colorado. So we burned last week in Avalanche Creek, like I said. That's really unusual. That was probably the earliest prescribed fire treatment we've done since 1977 on the forest, or on this side of the forest anyways, that anyone can really remember. So, you know, it's a long way to fire season, though, so we'll have to wait and see. It can really change quick.
Jamie, in that video, there's pictures of last year's Basalt Mountains before and after.
Well, like I said, that burn on Basalt Mountain, we had a window to burn, the burn went well, and then we had that very wet May that Jim was referring to, and it just went gangbusters up there. Lots of fresh growth, and that really is critical from a wildlife perspective. Elk like that fresh forage, bears like the acorns on the oaks, and when that vegetation gets to a certain age, it just stops producing. So it's excellent wildlife habitat, and it creates a, you know, an age class diversity in our forest, and it's really important from a resiliency standpoint to have forest stands that are of different ages and different species. It helps us be more resilient to things like insect and disease infestations in the future.
The mosaic of the forest.
The mosaic, indeed.
It's nice.
This is a prescribed fire to help improve the wildlife habitat and to reduce the buildup of hazardous fuels. If folks have questions about it, they can always go to wildernessworkshop.org or aspennature.org. The day of the fire, the best folks to contact are the Forest Service, and they can be reached at 970-963-2266. You can also call the Aspen Fire Department at 925-5532.
But do not call 911.
And there's no need to call 911 if in mid-April you see a bunch of smoke in Hunter Creek.
One more thing I would add. I know Jim mentioned the involvement of Basalt Fire during the Basalt Mountain burn. And we are really thrilled to be partnering with Aspen Fire on this. They'll be up there with the Forest Service. They will be available to answer questions. And there will be a community open house on the prescribed fire on Thursday, March 31st from 4 to 6 o'clock in the evening at the Aspen Fire Hall. We will all be there. All the representative agencies will be there. If you have questions, if you want to look at maps, please come to that community open house, and we'd be thrilled to talk with you.
Jamie Werner is the Forest Programs Director at ACES. Will Rausch is the Conservation Director at Wilderness Workshop. Jim Janung is the Forest Service Prescribed Fire and Fuels Specialist. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Carolyn.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.